Now, are women biologically ill-suited to work in high-pressure, high-stress technology fields like computer programming? In a 10-page memo that went viral this week, former Google engineer James Damore said women were inherently different compared to their male colleagues, that women were more prone to stress and anxiety and don't seek out more prominent roles in the field.
The memo was, in short, controversial. It also ultimately led to the firing of Damore. Story broke in the midst of ongoing concerns about the lack of women in programming and leadership positions in Silicon Valley. Our next guest says that historically this wasn't the case and that women were programmers long before men entered the field.
Marie Hicks is a writer and technology historian. She's the author of Programmed Inequality, How Britain Discarded Women Technologists and Lost Its Edge in Computing. She'll join the UW-Madison faculty in the fall. Marie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, what was your reaction when this memo first got out there in the public?
I had very little reaction because, honestly, it's just the same old story. This sort of thing comes around every few years or so, and it's just totally untrue, and so it sort of goes away pretty quickly. I think the reason it really blew up this time is because we are realizing more and more that we have a big problem with sexism in the tech industry.
Right. The argument in this memo was the lack of women in these fields isn't sexism, he said. It's on average, he was making the case, women have, temperaments, skills, abilities that aren't suited to technology. In your studies, you found that women were the technologists at many points in computer history.
Exactly. Basically, the entire history of computing completely disproves the arguments he's making. And he's making these arguments with the support of junk science that's been debunked for about 20 years anyway. But yes, history of computing shows that women were in very highly technical roles long before men were, because those technical roles used to be devalued. So in fact, women were the first computer programmers, and they did everything from hardware assembly and troubleshooting to systems analysis to computer operation and programming.
We'll spend a lot of our time in the present day, but I want to go back to some of your research and a time just after World War II when there was an emerging power really seemed to control the future of computer technology, Britain. What happened there? What was going on after World War II? And then how did that competitive advantage evaporate?
Yes, it's a very interesting story because the British had the first digital electronic programmable computers, and not only were they first, but they used them during World War II to actually change geopolitical events in a big way. The reason that the Allies knew where and when to land on D-Day was because of the code breaking that these early electronic computers did. And all of these computers were, of course, operated by women. After the war, those machines are kept secret and most of them are broken down, but women continue on in the field through the 50s, the 60s, and into the 70s. However, about the 1960s, there's this push to get more men into the field as managers in government and industry start to understand that computer work is actually more important than they initially thought. And what this does is it causes huge labor shortages because they're pushing out the technologists who actually have the training already, the women, and they're trying to get men into the field who not only don't have the skills or the training, but also aren't too interested in going into the field at this point because the field is seen as kind of low in value because women have been doing it. And this creates this butterfly effect that essentially makes the government consolidate the British computing industry, which had been doing very well, into one large company so that it can provide huge machines to accommodate the government's needs, since now they have this very small labor force of male technocrats to run their computers. And when they do this, the company ICL that they've merged and created, it does provide them with the huge mainframe solutions that they want, but it does so in an era when the mainframe, these big mainframes, are on their way out. And so essentially, the British computing industry implodes as a result of the government's self-made labor shortages due to gendered labor discrimination.
Talking to Marie Hicks, technology historian, soon to be a professor at UW-Madison, talking about gender and the high technology world. Marie, let's take that lesson there and maybe apply it to the modern day. We have this is sort of lowly, menial work. We'll let women do it in Britain. Oh, this is really important. We can't leave this to the women to do. It's important stuff, so men do it. So are we seeing similar attitudes at play here today?
Well, we definitely still see bifurcation in the high-tech sector between jobs of very similar skill level and value. We see women kind of getting shoved into certain jobs and men into other jobs, and the ones that are seen as higher prestige and more likely to lead to the C-suite are always the fields that are predominantly men. So we do see the same kinds of things going on. I think now it's a bit less obvious, but it's still very much baked into the structures of many of our institutions.
So what happens as girls first and then women maybe consider going into the technology world? What happens between those early efforts to get them interested in the STEM fields and at a point where there may be, 10 or 20% of the workforce in a lot of these fields?
Well, I think what happens is that women start out very interested in STEM. You know, there are lots of women who are interested in these fields in elementary and high school and even through college. But when they get into the workforce, it's kind of a rude awakening. Take the example of Google itself. This past summer, they refused to comply with a Department of Labor order to actually give information about how they were paying women versus men. They were allegedly paying them, you know, egregiously less than their male coworkers. And Google said, we're not going to give you that information. They said, oh, it's going to cost us $100,000 to give you that information, so that's too much. They wouldn't expend a tiny, tiny amount as a multi-billion dollar corporation to try to correct this problem of pay inequality. Now, when women see that they're undervalued, both in a very material sense, they are being paid less, and also they hear from companies that won't do anything to fix that, that they're not worth essentially helping, well, you know, they make decisions in line with their own best interests. And maybe that means going into another field.
The writer of this memo says, well, but look, Google's doing too much to promote diversity, maybe at the expense of outcomes. They're having programs that try to help young women get into technology. Is there real effort being made by a company like Google, whether the memo writer is right or not, that it's too much?
I think there is real effort being made, but I think that those efforts are a bit confused. They're based on this idea of a STEM pipeline, where if you get women in at an entry level, then eventually they'll work their way up, right? Because it's a meritocracy. Well, what we've seen is that, in fact, Silicon Valley and most places, it's not a meritocracy at all. So these women come in at lower levels and they don't go anywhere. They never get to work their way up. In fact, many of them, instead of, you know, staying at those low levels, they leave and they do something else. So even though technology companies have been trying to correct this problem, they're not really doing it in the way that, you know, social science researchers and historians and other folks who are experts in the field have said, look, this is really the way you need to try to fix these problems. And so their efforts have kind of come to nothing.
We'll get into those efforts in just a bit. Marie Hicks is with us right now, author, technology historian, soon to be at UW-Madison, talking about the controversial Google memo that made the rounds this week, authored by a Google engineer now fired who said women were a bad fit for jobs in the technology field, ultimately because of biology.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. If you work in the tech field, did you see this attitude in your workplace? Did you experience this maybe firsthand? And what did you think of that Google memo? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're continuing our conversation now about the Google memo that made the rounds this week that outlined one engineer's, now fired engineer's, opinion that women aren't biologically suited on average to work in the technology field. Marie Hicks is our guest, author and technology historian.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What did you think of the memo? If you're a woman who works in a tech field, what's your experience been like? What would you like to see change? Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can leave a comment over on the Central Time Facebook page.
Before we go to a caller, Marie, wanted to ask you, you were talking about, well, a lot of the efforts that companies are trying now aren't working. They're not great ideas. What would work to try to give women an equal footing, overcome some of the obstacles in the technology world?
I think the thing that we have to keep in mind when we talk about technology is that it's not unique. Technology is about concentrating and wielding power. And so it's not just about getting women into technology. It's about giving them power within the field and actually allowing them the power to change things in the field. So what needs to happen, and this has been happening a little bit more to some extent more recently, is that women have to be brought in at high levels. They can't just be brought in as entry-level workers and expected to work up. Women from other industries or other parts of the tech industry have to make lateral moves into companies that realize, hey, we have a big problem with this and we are really seriously trying to fix it.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Tammy is on the line in Blue River. Tammy, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say I did get a late start in the tech field. I graduated 2 years ago and was hired on right away at a corporation. And I'm the first female in my position in this company, and I've done phenomenally well. I'm well-liked, well-respected, and I'm doing very well with what I'm doing. So I kind of think what that whole memo was about really doesn't apply.
And Tammy, I want to ask, this is your first job in the field, it sounds like. Do you think you just lucked into something, or do you think that the company you work for did something right?
I think they did something right. They have me working with a wonderful team. I get along great with the people I work with. They're a younger generation, and I haven't had any problems or any reasons why I feel that I would be held back. I feel like they're doing their best for me to help me succeed in what I'm doing.
Tammy, thanks for the call. Congratulations. Is there something about setting up a workplace culture, Marie, that can have more people have experiences like Tammy's?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would assume a lot of the things that Tammy's employer are doing are, geared to actually make sure that their women who are in the minority don't feel like they're in the minority, don't feel like they're marginalized. I bet none of her coworkers have said things similar to what was said in the Google memo. That's, one big part of it.
Thanks a lot for the call, Tammy. We'll go next to Don on the line in Madison. Don, hi.
Hi, how are you doing? So I had a couple of comments. First, obviously I don't condone that person's memo, and I don't feel that same way. But on the alternative side, I come from a science background, and I've noticed that there's less males coming out of high school going into STEM as well, and there seems to be more of a push for these organizations to reach females, to get more females into the sciences, whereas it seems like males in the science category are being left behind. And in the case of getting hired for certain jobs, it seems like there's a preference to get females into the sciences, where somebody who might be more qualified, a good example of this is a male who may be more qualified, have more education, have been in sciences, actually pushed aside to fill a certain quota. And I don't think that by discriminating against one group, that's necessarily a way to solve the problem that for a group that's been discriminated against for
Don,
the last 30
Don, thanks for
years.
The call. So in effect, Marie, affirmative action, Don is worried about favoring women at the expense of men.
Yes, and that's a worry. That's a perception of what's going on that really doesn't hold water when you actually look at the facts of the situation. I do agree with Don that it would be a shame if young men who are interested in, say, computer science don't have the opportunities to go on in the field. But that's really not what we're seeing in terms of hiring. We're seeing that women are consistently paid less and hired when they have the same qualifications, they are not as likely to be hired. There have been a number of studies done where similar or, in fact, identical resumes will be sent out, one with a man's name and one with a woman's name. And again, the male's resume will get a higher proportion of job offers and much stronger interest than the woman's resume with exactly the same qualifications. So, in fact, women are actually held to a higher standard in these fields and many others.
Don, thanks for the call. As we start to wrap up, Marie, I mean, we, as you said at the outset, these kind of things, it's the memo this week. There have been other flare-ups, generate a lot of heated conversation. But do you see maybe slowly some kind of positive progress being made when it comes to gender and technology?
I hope so. I think that these flare-ups, as disturbing as they are, these flare-ups, you know, in the media are productive in some way if they get us actually thinking about the problem and thinking about solutions to the problem. So I'm going to be optimistic, hold out hope for what happens next, and hope that this is a conversation that actually leads to some positive change.
Marie, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Marie Hicks, writer and technology historian. She's the author of Programmed Inequality, How Britain Discarded Women Technologists and Lost Its Edge in Computing. She'll begin teaching at UW-Madison this fall.
She joined us to talk about that controversial Google memo that made the rounds this week that detailed one engineer's opinion that women aren't biologically suited to work in the tech field and why she says that line of thinking might slow down technological progress.
And you can find more information and share your thoughts, maybe your experiences if you've worked in this field, just head over to the Central Time Facebook page.